This is CliffCentral.com.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the Finance Team, your part-time financial executive solution. In this first half hour, our business skills conversation is brought to you in association with USB Ed. Last week, we spoke to Cynthia Schumann of the Ethics Monitor on the whole question of understanding workplace ethics. A great show. Download that from our website if you haven't already listened to it. Today's theme, the whole question of sustainability, trends into 2017, and how they impact on South African business. Joining us in studio is our guest, Kerry Boucher of Think Sustainability and a part-time facilitator with USB Ed. Welcome, Kerry.
Thanks, Richard. Great to be here.
And thanks for joining us again in studio. You know, she's no stranger to the studio. Sure. Always good to talk sustainability with you. So the past year has seen some profound shifts globally in the rising support for things like protectionism, populism, growing cybercrime, and shifting global climate issues in terms of who's leading the track, all amid growing political and economic instability, and I think that's a global picture. At the same time, opportunities for companies to help solve global challenges have never been more varied, perhaps and even more never so compelling. A growing number of companies are already taking some action, testing their social, sustainable development goals are set by the UN, having a look and seeing what they should be doing in terms of climate targets, perhaps, and adapting plans to address things like food and health challenges globally. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of everybody's looking at these elements. But I had a look at this report that's been released from Sustainability. And their whole question they had, they had identified some trends that they say are moving us into 2017. So I thought we should perhaps chat about those and let's call them, ground them in the South African context of exactly what we're seeing and experiencing. The first one was this whole question of globalization and how that world is shifting. I think, you know, we think of, and we always talk as South Africans, as the global trends, but the reality is protectionism is actually now a name of the game.
Absolutely.
It's no longer, almost let's go global. It's now let's stay national. Let's close our borders. Brexit, the US elections are just two examples.
Yes.
And global trade is actually slowing. I mean, I saw some stats that showed that global trade only grew by 1.7% in 2016, mm-hmm. which is the slowest since the global financial crisis of 2009. So for me, I'm going, okay, so if you're a South African company and you're saying to create a sustainable business, I'm going to go to the world. Well, actually, the world's not interested in you right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, it might not be the best timing.
Yeah.
And I think the challenge is it's two things. It's kind of, if you look at one of the component pillars of sustainability, we always talk about social capital. And that's really social, society, things like increasing inequalities having major impact on that.
Mm-hmm.
People are feeling very disjointed from, I think, a value system in some ways, and saying traditionally jobs have moved and it's made our population poorer, which is bringing this whole protectionist mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've got to start saying it might not be going to the world anymore. It might be specific markets that are still open for business.
Okay.
And I think Africa has a lot of potential in that space because mm-hmm. the growth is still very good in most African countries, even though it's coming off a very low base. But I think you're going to have some challenges if you're trying to get into the traditional Western societies that most people have seen as the growth engines in the past. Mm. And that's not so easy. But in that challenge, there may be different opportunity. But I think it might be quite problematic if you just say we want to go global without understanding that may not be that easy to do anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say the global plane ticket has been revoked and you're now,
yes.
You're now stuck with. And I think the way you go to other markets is now also going to fundamentally change.
Yes.
Because you're not going to first world markets that are going to buy from you on the internet. You're going to perhaps developing third world markets in Africa where you're going to have to put down bricks and mortar and a physical presence.
Yes.
So your response as a South African business is going to fundamentally change in terms of, of that world. Now, the other, the next thing that they identified, which I, when I saw these numbers, I was just shocked, is this whole question of, and they use the word, a cybercrime epidemic. Now, the word epidemic is quite a strong word in my world. And they mentioned the costs of cybercrime estimated at $3 trillion US dollars in 2015. And I looked at those numbers and I thought, whoa, that's big. It's a big number.
Yeah.
So that's a global picture. What I found very concerning in my mind was things like disclosures. Yahoo disclosed in 2016 that they had private data stolen from a billion accounts in 2013. So 3 years later, they come clean and say, listen, you know, we had a problem and you've had a problem for the last 3 years if you were one of those billion people who had information compromised. And I'm just going, you know, we're spending millions of dollars a year defending against cyber attacks. And I kind of go, wow, you know, this is going to become a real issue from this. Let's talk about the sustainability of your, let's call it your income and expense flows. Okay. I mean, the reality is this cost line is going to increase exponentially. I mean, there's this I saw a stat that said by 2020, they estimate that there will be 20 billion devices connected to the internet. Now, in my mind, that just means vulnerability.
And I think that's something most people don't think of. Even if you think of in your personal capacity, you know, oh, we've got a Wi-Fi system at home and this, is it actually password protected? You know, there's been multiple cases of people actually being able to get into your security system, for example, because there's not adequate protection. And obviously this is a risk for companies to manage, just as anything else around the field of sustainability is a risk. But I think it's how well are small businesses prepared for this, because if a ransomware attack would had to hit South Africa, what would it mean for them?
Yeah.
How many of them could kind of overcome that? Recently, we saw that British Airways, their whole IT system failed in one day.
Yeah.
And they also made the point of cutting cost is actually more expensive in the long term if you cut it on the wrong things.
Yeah.
So companies are going to have to probably move the IT risk higher up the agenda.
Yeah.
And start having some serious discussions about how does this remain a very big business imperative to make sure we have actually protected ourselves. What do you do if hackers target your company?
Yeah.
And kind of actually having a discussion about that risk, because unfortunately once it's hit you, it's a bit late to start the conversation.
After the horse's bolted story.
And I don't think too many, even South African large companies, would be well prepared to deal with a real cyber attack if it actually happened to them. Because it's just, we're all into devices and systems and using things that make our lives more convenient, but there is a risk in that.
Well, I mean, I often joke, I say, you know, don't worry about the cyber attack, just worry about the guy with the bulldozer that takes out your connection, your fiber, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, just something as simple as that takes businesses down for days on end. And redundancy and backup plans and all of this stuff. The sustainability of one's business. And I was in an environment where we talked, how long could we be down for?
Yes.
And people would say, oh, we could be down for 24 hours, et cetera, et cetera. Not too long after that, we did go down, okay? And within 15 minutes, people were screaming, you know, like, why can we not get ourselves back up? But I thought we were okay for 24 hours. No, well, we didn't. When you said we were going to go down, we didn't think that would mean the email is down. You know, like, we live on our email, our voice over IP, all of the, well, everything's down. So now you sit with a challenge. So now, one of the other things, and I guess a little closer to the world of, let's call it the traditional sustainability question, is this whole question of climate issues and leadership in the climate space, and the shakeup with our dear friends in the US opting out of the Paris Agreement. It seems that China's set to take central stage in climate matters of late. And I think the reality is that, you know, businesses are realizing the importance of climate in terms of that sustainable profitability and things like focus on renewable energy. I think we've gone through our own challenges around renewables in this country.
Absolutely.
I mean, what are you seeing in local business around renewable energies, et cetera, and climate controls?
I think there's a growing awareness of it, but I don't necessarily think that everyone is on board and understanding that it can provide much longer-term benefits in terms of adding to profitability.
Mm-hmm.
Because they make the mistake of looking at the upfront investment in the space of 1 or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you actually look at it over a 3 to 5 year or 7 year period, obviously that's very, very different. So yes, there's been, I think, a lot of interest. I think a lot has changed. People are much more open. We've got a lot more independent power producers as well in South Africa, but there's still a lot of roadblocks in terms of individual, perhaps businesses and homeowners actually being able to like sell power back into the grid, which maybe is delaying things slightly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is a growing awareness of it, and I think we can still do a lot more because we are apparently the third best location in the world for solar.
Yeah, and that's why. Well, that's why nuclear makes so much sense.
Yes, absolutely. And
sorry,
if you just
look at
the cost of that versus the cost of putting solar on everyone's homes, it just makes more sense to do that because long term you've provided a solution that works for everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think the reality is, I mean, you've recently seen Elon Musk with the solar tile. I know Lisa Illingworth and a team locally were busy working with solar tile work. It's just so obvious for us as a country, as a solution.
Yes.
But we haven't really embraced that.
Mm.
So yeah, from a sustainability question, you know, sustainability perspective, something that we could be making a difference on as a South Africa, as South Africans. Now, our dear friends at the UN put out their Sustainable Development Goal program.
Mm-hmm.
Big splashy debut out there, but it seems now that the next steps on that one are a little bit sketchy. I mean, they, you know, middle management, you know, so a lot of, let's call it executive board level buy-in, executive talking about it. Middle level management, you know, a survey showed that less than 5% of middle level management actually has a clue what those sustainable development goals actually are. You know, you say an SDG and they go like, what's that?
Yeah.
An acronym they don't even understand. But the interesting thing is that those goals have the ability to unlock, and they've identified it, and you know they're trying to quantify it. But they've kind of said there's a $12 trillion new market opportunity in sustainable development in the underdeveloped world.
Yes.
Now, you know, put that in the context of the globalization and nationalization type of boundaries that we've talked about earlier. Opening up a $12 trillion new market, now that's something that business should be thinking about and be aware of. But are companies in South Africa even thinking about, you know, sustainable development goals and the UN's goals and how to kind of angle their response to that? Because, I mean, most of them would not be directly involved in creating those goals, but they definitely could be on the response side. Are we seeing people responding, or are we kind of down the bottom end of Africa and kind of ignoring? I always love it when people say, and the people in Africa, but you're in South Africa, you're part of Africa.
Yes.
It kind of feels like we think we're outside
separate,
of our, we're separate from Africa.
So I think, Richard, I think at the moment you're seeing kind of two things. So you're seeing large companies like Unilever, who as much as they have a presence in South Africa and Africa, doing great things and really on track because they really are focusing on some basic stuff like hygiene and how that impacts disease and kids growing up and the ability to actually attend school and education that can help in poverty. And all of those are some of the sustainable development goals. I think the challenge at the moment is because of where we find ourselves economically is many companies are very internally focused on survival mode.
Mm.
And they're not seeing that this presents an opportunity where we could change some things.
Yeah, so they're not addressing the market, so to speak.
No.
And
it's
that
thing of the challenge of things changing, you know, looking for different materials that may become more cost effective over time in production.
Mm.
Looking at things like, yes, the environmental impact, the social impact. all of those things ultimately present a different opportunity. And definitely, if you look at the underdeveloped world, there's going to be many opportunities, but you're probably also going to have to develop a different kind of product. You know?
So I guess the message is, if you want to build in a sustainable world, you're going to have to address the sustainable market in a different way.
Yes,
with absolutely. A different solution. And ultimately, I guess that market's going to look for, let's call it the traditional product requirements, you know, product meeting their needs, the price right, all that good stuff. But one of the added elements is going to be sustainability in that market and in let's call it in execution inside that market.
Yes.
You know, you can't be a flash in the pan, you know, I ship a container of the stuff and then I don't worry about it anymore. They're not, that's not going to fly. In the let's call
no,
it in the
new
in
long
the,
term,
yeah. yeah in the new world order, you know, you can't just push it out there and, you know, Henry Ford style, as long as you know it's black, as long as you want a black car, you're okay.
Yeah.
That world is no longer part of let's call it the market. You know, we used to talk about the marketing mix, old marketing mix. I think what's almost come to the fore now is that sustainability of that model is you know the sustainability of delivery, execution, you know, competitiveness. That's now the watchwords. We want to know that we can rely on this product and that it's always there, or service. It's always there. It's consistent delivery. And then you've got a brand and a company that's going
to
go somewhere.
And it's beyond the individual company throughout the supply chain. So that's something you may also have to consider as you start progressing, because more and more we're seeing companies have to provide how the value chain fits together.
Yeah.
Not just my company is sustainable, but my suppliers are sustainable, and I've provided a product that I've considered what happens to it at its end of life. So not just, oh, well, I've made something that's going to be used today and wasted tomorrow. I now have to think about, how do I take that item once it's going to be now thrown away? How is it now going to have an impact on the environment, on society? And what am I going to do to actually create a long-term future, not a short-term profitability only for tomorrow?
Yeah, and I think as those new, you know, that $12 trillion new market develops, the reality is it develops with the knowledge of, let me call it, new market thinking, that, you know, it kind of picks up where our current markets are. So it doesn't go through the same learning curve that everybody else goes, you know, it goes from grade 1 to grade 12 in one step.
Yes.
You know, hold on a second, we need to know how we manage end of life on X product. Well, it took us 20 years to answer that question in, you know, the US or the Europe. Well, sorry, you're going to have to answer that in the next 3 weeks in the new market, because we already know about this. So knowledge is power in that in that market space. Now, talking about knowledge is power, one of the comments was about whose news is it? You know, the whole question on sustainability and fake news and the impact of social media. I found this statistic absolutely mind-blowing from the Pew Research Center. And this is not US-based research, this is global research. They said that 44% of the general population get their news from Facebook. And I was like, really? And I thought about that, and I thought, well, actually, and I thought about my own personal news. I thought, I will go onto Facebook and then look at Business Day Live and Times Live and this and that. And I think, you know, actually, if I think about it, I probably access probably 2/3 of my news sites via Facebook. I do.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, that's an interesting one. What I also found interesting in that same research space, they said that Google search algorithms have been shown to be able to shift undecided voter preferences by as much as 20%.
Mm.
Now, put those two pieces of information together and you realize the power of social media. And then you have to ask our friends at places like Pepsi and New Balance, who dealt with some customer boycotts because of, let's call it, the fake news that they had to deal with. And more recently, locally here, MyWay had that whole drama with the guy trying, you know, who said this is what was said. And, well, next minute we're talking boycotting. I think MyWay handled it particularly well. They were very transparent and they said this is what they're doing. And the person subsequently apologized and they've gone through that whole process. But it just shows the power of fake news. And, you know, I think no further than our friends at Bell Pottinger on this one. I mean, how are customers and companies having to deal with that fake news element from a sustainability perspective in your experience?
I think it's a big risk, Richard. Mm. And I think, again, it's one of those things most people aren't prepared to actually deal with those discussions right now, right? Mm. Because on social media, anyone can say anything they want about your business.
Mm. Mm.
So actually, it's what your customers tell each other and tell the rest of the world about you.
Mm.
So have you given them a reason to perhaps say that? And maybe it's anti-competitive behavior. Your competitor wants to see you struggle, so they actually behind the fake news. Mm. And all of that means you've got to have, obviously, a much more wider kind of measuring of what's going on in social media, who's saying what about our business.
Yeah.
And if that were to come out as something hugely negative, you know, like you've said, My Way have handled it very responsibly in a transparent way. That's what you would hope business does. But I doubt all businesses are equipped to deal with that.
So it's about being prepared.
I think
and being transparent. It's a values conversation.
It's
as
a values conversation.
Now, they also in this report, one of the next elements that they raised is this whole question of food and food security and sustainability. And I found that quite interesting. And I'm going to link this with this whole question of things like antibiotics and pandemics and the likes. I mean, they made the comment. They said health issues such as diabetes and obesity have increased by 400% since the early the early 80s. They also made the point that livestock production, so meat production, produces 18% of global greenhouse gases, which was an absolute number. I mean, I think of sustainability reporting in the corporate space, and it's like, how much meat do you serve in your canteen? as a question. And I'm like going, okay, wouldn't have thought of that, but it's a real issue. And I mean, also we're now into this, let's call it the post-antibiotic era, where things like bacteria are becoming drug-resistant. I mean, what is happening in that space of sustainability from a South African business perspective? What should we be worrying about?
I think we've got to worry about a couple of things, Richard. First of all is kind of food production. You know, how much are we producing locally?
Mm-hmm.
If we are at risk of another big drought, like in the beginning, end of 2015, we had a substantial decrease in food production across the country. The risk is you then have to import food from other places.
You go from being the bread basket to the basket case.
Yeah. Okay. And you've got to ask, well, what was that sprayed with? What chemicals were used? All of those things, unfortunately, get into the food, and you need to understand what that does maybe to people who eat it.
Yeah.
It's also, you know, what are we doing to educate people about better nutrition? Eating more fruits and veggies, not so much meat. And unfortunately, we are a country of meat-eating people.
Fleischreis Artopus.
Yeah, that one. And so it's all about the balance, I guess. And it's also about, you know, I think a lot of what's gone out is that people have moved away from having their own little basic veggie garden at home. Those are things we might need to bring back. And even educating kids at school about having a veggie garden, what does it mean to grow food? What is the price of food? And what are the risks and everything with it?
And when you ask the child in grade two, where does milk come from? And they say Woolworths, then you know you've got a problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's all of that.
Now, I mean, the whole consumption mindset has been identified as a major sustainability risk. I mean, the reality is that consumption is fast outpacing our waste management capabilities. Human health, land, and marine ecosystems are being impacted by just this constant deluge of, let's call it, consumption-linked waste, etc. I mean, I've seen some really good waste management companies springing up in the you know, to address some of those challenges. Surely that's a great opportunity in the South African context to get that right.
So. And I think it's not just on basic stuff we all look at. It's almost everything, right? So it's all what happens to all your old electronic equipment. What happens to your old clothes? All of those things. And I mean, great, you know, you mentioned Woolworths. They've started those little clothing banks where you can go and put your used items in. And then they're using that to either put back into new materials and remanufacture clothes. But there's also some interesting stuff being done with plastics globally where people are collecting them not to just recycle them, but to actually use them for new building materials like even housing. And I think all of those spaces, there's opportunity if you can understand what is available and what you can do.
So I guess the recycling market gives new sustainability, to new business ideas. That what do they say? Somebody else's junk is somebody else's pleasure.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Now, one of the other trends that they've identified, and this one is, I guess, quite close to me, is this whole question of, let's call it financial disclosure. And it's not just pure financial disclosure, but it's disclosure requirements that are emerging.
Yes.
So the whole, and I know this is something that's close to your heart, is this whole principle of what are we doing around sustainable investing, and sustainable investing needs sustainability reporting. So, you know, if you want to invest in a company or want to know whether you can invest in somebody, you need the right reporting from that company. And if companies, I guess the whole ESG reporting frameworks come to the fore here, reality, it's no longer nice to have. If you want that, let's call it sustainable investing to happen, you need to make sure that you're reporting.
Yes.
What are you finding around, you know, are companies focusing here as a reporting standard, or are they just kind of doing the minimum because they have to?
I think in South Africa, we've seen globally, there's a very interesting trend that companies who actually understand this, but not just as a reporting tool, but where they actually say, let's do integrated decision making, and as a result, let's report on what the outcomes are seeing a very different financial measure come out and actually become more profitable as companies. The risk is if you see it as a compliance tool, which unfortunately I think it is in South Africa in a lot of cases, it's a great report. It just doesn't mean you have shifted any of those fundamentals in your business to actually harness the opportunity that it presents. And I think that's where we're missing something, maybe.
We're missing that, yeah. Well, Kerry, it's been great to chat to you. We really appreciate your insights. It's always great to talk about sustainability and how we run our environments. I guess the one thing that always sticks with me, there was a comment at the end of that report. It said Oxford University has said that by 2035, and that's not too far out, 47% of all jobs will become automated. Okay, so the need for labor, as we know, is diminishing really fast.
Yes.
And so the question is, to create sustainability for ourselves and our children, you know, what are we doing and what are we actively doing as business people? So I'd put that out there to the listeners to say to themselves, you know, what are they doing to help create sustainability for the future? Kerry, thank you for your time in studio.
Pleasure,
we really
Richard.
Appreciate that with us. Next up is our business conversation. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.